ready for this?
Thank God it's
Oh, yeah, the work week is over. You can put the work away and head into a sports weekend with the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch, and you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Any questions, comments, or suggestions, fire away. Let us know what's on your sports brain on this Friday. 46862. A lot of guests coming up on the show today, including our sports law attorney, Dan Lust. He's going to join us because of the Deshaun Watson situation. Also, what's happening with the LIV Golf versus the PGA. Dan Lust coming up 30 minutes from now. Hour number two, we've got John Nolan joining us. We'll talk a little bit about the Tin Caps trip to Eastlake, Ohio. Not going so well for the Tin Caps so far. They've dropped the first three games of the series, including a 6-1 loss last night. But we've got some new faces, and maybe there'll be some more that will join the Tin Caps before this season is over, especially if they get out of the playoff run. Then you might see some shuffling of players as they try to set the rosters for Lake Elsinore and San Antonio. Both of those teams have qualified for the playoffs in the first half of the season, and so they will want to have them in a good position come playoff time when the regular season ends. Now, I don't know if they demote people, but that's one of the questions we'll talk to John Nolan about coming up at 5:20. And then at 5:35, we've got Snyder coach Kurt Tippmann, one of our favorites. We had a chance to visit with him. Caleb and Justin talked to him out at the high school football media day. And we will replay the visit with Coach Kurt Tippmann of the Snyder Panthers. He's the veteran coach in the SAC, right? I'm trying to scan all of the teams and think through them quickly in my mind. I think Coach Tippmann has coached at Snyder longer than any other SAC coach. So, Coach Tippmann joining us here on the Sports Rush. That will be a replay of our conversation from a couple of weeks ago at 5:35. So yesterday we told you that Vegas has the lines out for every NFL game minus a handful, including the Cleveland Browns games, because they are waiting to see what is going to happen with the Deshaun Watson situation. And so at this point, if we assume that every game Vegas has a team favored, they will win. And every game that Vegas has listed a team as an underdog, they would lose. Then we can go through and figure out one-loss records based on Vegas. And so I did that. I went through every schedule in the NFL, counted wins and losses based on who's the favorite, who's the underdog. Yesterday, we did the AFC, Colts 9-5. Perhaps the eye-opener in the AFC was that Buffalo, including a trip to Kansas City, Buffalo 16-0. They're the favorites in every game that's currently on the board for the Buffalo Bills. But is there a 16-0 in the NFC? Well, let's take a look at what the NFC looks like. We'll start in the NFC East, or as some have called it recently, the NFC Least. Maybe I'm the only one that calls it that, but because actually the AFC South might be worse, or the NFC South might be worse. The NFC East has Philadelphia, Dallas, Washington, and the New York Giants. And where do we start? Let's start in the Big Apple. Let's start with the New York Giants. Vegas has them 5-12. That's probably about right. That seems to be about the neighborhood that I would have the Giants. Washington, with their new quarterback, Carson Wentz, they've got them 6-8. They've got three games that are not currently on the board. 6-8 seems like a bit of a stretch, but Washington 6-8 doesn't have a super tough schedule. Then you've got Philadelphia. This one surprised me, Caleb, because I've got Philadelphia as maybe a 10-win team. 10-7, I think, would be solid for Philadelphia. Do you know what Vegas has them as far as favorites? 13-3. I mean, I know they've done a lot to try to upgrade in Philadelphia, but they still have Jalen Hurts as their quarterback. I just don't see Jalen Hurts as a 13-3 quarterback. We'll see. Because what's surprising is they've got Philadelphia rather easily winning the division over Dallas. All 17 Dallas games do have a line. And if you believe Vegas, right now Dallas is going to finish 11-6 based on the games they are a favorite. Cowboys 11-6 with Philadelphia 13-3. Now, again, if you're doing math, not every game has a line. So I could only give wins and losses for the games that currently have a favorite or an underdog. So the NFC East has Philadelphia 13-3, Dallas 11-6, Washington 6-8, Giants 5-12. Let's go north to the NFC North. Green Bay. I mean, I guess Green Bay I'd expect to be good. They also get four games against Chicago and Detroit. They don't have the easiest schedule, being a division champion from a year ago. But Vegas likes Green Bay. 13-2 right now for the Packers. Minnesota, who really gets the benefit of four games against Detroit and Chicago. Minnesota 10-5. And then you've got Detroit 3-14. And the Chicago Bears 2-14. I don't know if they've got the Bears. I don't know if they've got them winning a division game. They might have them winning against Detroit at home. But it looks like a tough year ahead for the Chicago Bears. And, of course, they've got a whole situation going on, too, with Roquan Smith. He's demanding a trade, but here's what's interesting is apparently there are reports that there was a representative of Roquan Smith who was contacting other teams to determine the amount of trade interest in Roquan Smith. The only problem is that Chicago Bears did not give Smith the approval to go out and seek a trade. And the person that apparently was contacting NFL teams, because Roquan Smith may or may not represent himself, the person that was contacting NFL teams is not an NFLPA approved sports agent. So, it's the Bears, not a well-run organization. But anyway, the Bears 2-14. NFC South. Let's start at the bottom. Carolina 2-13. So they've got 15 of the 17 Carolina games listed before Carolina has picked a starter, which means it doesn't matter if it's Darnold or Mayfield, Carolina is not going to be a good football team, at least in the eyes of Vegas. And it doesn't make much difference as far as the lines go because they've already posted them, and Carolina's on the board for 15 of their 17 games, 2-13. New Orleans, 5-9. What do you think, Atlanta? How many wins do you think Vegas has for Atlanta at this point?
Four.
One.
Wow.
Yeah. One win. Not a lot of confidence in Marcus Mariota in Atlanta. 1-14 for Atlanta. That brings us to Tampa Bay. I don't know what's going on with Tom Brady. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Tampa Bay loses Gronk. Does that cost them in the eyes of Vegas? Apparently not. Tampa Bay joins Buffalo as being the only two teams in the NFL that will not be an underdog in any game this season. 16-0, Tampa Bay is favored. Now, I would imagine, and I remind people this every time we talk about lines, one factor that Vegas puts into the spread is the amount of, I call it dead money. I don't know officially what Vegas calls it, but it's the money that follows a team or a player. Regardless of the opponent, it's like, oh, Tom Brady, I'm going to bet on them. I'm going to bet on the Patriots, or I'm going to bet on whatever it might be. And there's, you know, it's like betting on the Yankees to win every night because you just think the Yankees are the best thing in baseball. And there's certain money. And it also happens with Ohio State. It happens with Notre Dame. It doesn't matter what the spread is. the fan base always believes they're better than whatever the spread is. And so there's certain money that always is attached to certain teams or certain players. And Vegas has to account for that. So in some cases, you could have a pick'em game for Tampa Bay. But if Tampa Bay always gets an unfair share of the money, the line is going to be Tampa Bay favored by a point or two. It could be, you know, Tampa Bay minus 1.5 or 2, 2.5. But that's always because there's certain money that bets on a certain player or certain team, regardless of what the line is. So Tampa Bay, 16-0. Surprised at all after what we heard yesterday, Caleb, that Buffalo was 16-0, that Tampa Bay starts out 16-0, according to Vegas spreads?
I guess not, based on Buffalo. It just, we know that's not going to happen, so I think it's absurd that they're favored in every game.
But it does tell you who they think are the best teams in each conference. Clearly, Vegas is going into the season believing that the best teams, based on the schedule they play, Buffalo, Tampa Bay. Would it be worth a futures bet to put that in as a Super Bowl matchup? Buffalo, Tampa Bay. Do you like that as a Super Bowl matchup?
Not really. I'm not sold on the Bucks anymore. I mean, they seem like the Lakers of what, 2004, where they added those aging stars and Gary Payton and Karl Malone, and they're trying to hang on. And well, yes, that Lakers team made it to the finals.
But about the Lakers of last year.
Yeah, true. At least the Bucks will be a playoff team, right? Barring an injury to Tom Brady. But it feels like they're hanging on and they're trying to get something that just simply doesn't exist anymore.
I mean, it seemed like all of a sudden LeBron still put up great LeBron numbers, but things just didn't click like they had in years past. And you wonder if that's what's ahead for Tom Brady. And you also wonder, is Tom Brady 100% in for Tampa Bay? You know, Tom Brady's got a reputation as being a guy that is 100% committed, film study, preparation, work ethic. And it just seems strange to me, this 10-day break that he's taken for personal reasons to deal with a personal family matter. And then Todd Bowles is saying that this was something that was pre-agreed upon with Tom Brady, that he was going to miss a 10-day period of camp. So it's not like a family emergency or something that popped up. And I don't know. I don't know what it is. There's plenty of rumors. In a situation like this, you're always going to get rumors, especially with social media and the impact and power of social media. Things are going to spread. Stories are going to be told. Many of them are false. Some might be true. But one of the things that we're hearing is perhaps there's health issues around his mother. The fact that Tom wanted to be there for his kids to have their first day of school and all of that, and wanted to participate in that since he's never been able to do that. And maybe it's at a point in his career where he feels like he doesn't need a full training camp, that he can get up to a certain level or a certain speed and then take a little break and come back and start prepping for the beginning of the season. I don't know. I don't know if we're supposed to make anything of this or not. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You could tell us, is there something we should be making out of the Tom Brady situation? That leaves us with the NFC West. And now, Seattle certainly has its issues. And right now, Seattle, is Geno going to be the quarterback in Seattle? Is that just... strikingly strange that it's Geno. It just doesn't seem like Geno. Number one, I'm surprised he's still around. But then number two, to be considered one of the top 32 quarterbacks in the league.
I mean, maybe it goes to a battle between Drew Locke and, get this, Jacob Eason, the third stringer.
Oh, that's right. They picked up Eason. Well, anyway, whoever's the quarterback at Seattle, 4-13 is what Vegas has them right now. Arizona. You know, a lot of people really like Arizona. Personnel-wise, Arizona is pretty good. but they're going to be an underdog in 9 of their 17 games. Vegas has them as favorites 8 times, underdogs 9 times. So if we use that as their one loss record, Arizona finishes out of the playoffs with an 8-9 record. Now, I would flip-flop, quite honestly, I would flip-flop Arizona and San Francisco. I think Arizona is going to have a better record than San Francisco. San Francisco is running a huge gamble with Trey Lance as the quarterback. They've got San Francisco as a favorite 11 out of 16 games. They've got San Francisco 11-5. And that leaves the Rams at 12-3. Now remember, the Rams have one of the toughest schedules in the league, and yet they're still projected to be 12-3. So what do we have for rankings in the NFC? Tampa Bay, 16-0, number one. Number two, Green Bay at 13-2. Number three, Philadelphia. Rob Livergood probably just loving this, that Philadelphia is projected to have a 13-3 record.
I don't understand the Philly hype. Like, yeah, they made the playoffs. They're in a division where all the teams are, I mean, the Giants are awful. The Cowboys underachieve, it seems, year in, year out. Washington is meh. Eagles, I would say, are meh. I mean, that division's not exciting. Yeah, it's got great media markets, but it's not exciting.
I guess the question is, do you buy Jalen Hurts as, and I the word elite gets overused, but as a playoff caliber quarterback? Because I still think quarterback, you've got to have a certain standard or a certain level of quality to be a playoff team. Last year, the Colts, I think, had a playoff roster minus a playoff quarterback. Carson Wentz wasn't good enough to be a playoff quarterback. If they'd have had a playoff caliber quarterback, they would have found a way to get in the playoffs last year. Yes, I know. The defense blew some leads late, gave up tons of points in the second half and all that. But also, there were some mistakes made by the Colts quarterback that led to some easy points that switched the momentum of those games. So, okay, let's go on. Philadelphia, 13-3. Yeah, I'm shocked. L.A. Rams, 12-3. San Francisco, 11-5. Elite pressure up front. Deebo Samuel, he's happy, he's paid. But this is banking a lot on an unknown quarterback, Trey Lance. And Vegas always seems to know more than I. So maybe Vegas has reports that they believe that Trey Lance is going to be pretty special his first year out there. Because 11-5 in that division, that's pretty darn good for San Francisco. Dallas, 11-6. And the final playoff team in the NFC, Minnesota. And Minnesota, 10-5. And one of those games that they're the favorite is over the Colts late in the season in a home game in Minnesota. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Your thoughts, 46862. Plenty more coming up, including last night's Field of Dreams event in Dyersville, Iowa. We'll talk about that. We also will talk about an Indiana Little League team that's hitting the big time. Big win for one of our Indiana Little League teams last night. And we've got Dan Luss joining us. It's all coming up in the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. Always connected with the show on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. 46862. Last night, Cubs Reds, Field of Dreams. You know, they're not going to have a Field of Dreams game next year. Apparently, the Cubs and Reds have completely ruined the entire project. You know, what was it? Yankees, White Sox? Was that the one last year? What was that? The one last year had all the drama and the home run, and oh, it was such a great game. And this year, it's Reds Cubs, and it was about as bad as you'd expect it to be.
Yeah, it was Yankees White Sox last year. Tim Anderson with the walk off.
Yeah, win. Awesome game, right? I mean, fun to watch, great atmosphere, exciting finish to the baseball game. This year, Reds had trouble scoring off Smiley. Is it Smiley? Whatever the guy's name, the pitcher for the Cubs. All I know is the game would have put me to sleep, except I watched just because I was interested in this whole Harry Carey hologram. Fox decided to try something kind of different and unique last night for the seventh inning stretch, which, oddly enough, it was the Reds that were the home team. But for the seventh inning stretch, they had a hologram in the press box of Harry Carey leading the crowd in Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Did you catch this last night, Caleb? I know you weren't going to see a lot of the game.
I missed the start. I caught like the eighth inning on by the time I got home. So I missed that. All reports say it was very creepy.
Well, here's what was creepy is I didn't know if it was a hologram or if it was a lookalike, because to me, I don't think I guess a hologram, it's an image of the actual guy, right? But I mean, I thought, I know what Harry Carey looks like. I grew up watching Harry Carey. But the hologram, this is it. I'm going to show you. This was the hologram, Caleb. To me, it didn't look like Harry Carey.
Yeah, it's weird.
And he was the only one of the entire night that actually wore a modern-looking sport coat. And yet, two things. Number one, Harry Carey didn't wear the coats once he came to the Cubs. I think he wore the coats when he was the White Sox broadcaster. I believe when he came to WGN, it was golf shirts. I don't think that they required ties of Harry Carey when he came over to WGN to do the Cubs games. But anyway, I wondered what your thoughts were about the hologram, because I didn't think it looked a lot like Harry. Then the clothes that he wore, where he was the only person on the broadcast last night that actually wore modern clothing, because everybody else had some kind of a, not really retro, but an older look or you know, like a Field of Dreams type look, where they had the what's the cap like John Smoltz had on? What's that cap called? Somebody. You know, the old style, like golf cap. What's that? I'm the word's at the tip of my tongue. So
like a derby hat?
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
It's the kind of a, like if you take a hat and you flatten it, and then it just has the little bill. I bet we've got people that they're like, they probably own those hats. In fact, I've looked to buy those hats, and I can't think now what the name is. Drawing a complete blank. But Smoltz wore one of those last night. They had the band on the arms and stuff. So everybody was trying to look like they were old school or retro or whatever. And then they put Harry out there. Now, I thought the idea was kind of cute and clever, but to me, the execution was a little creepy. Here's what they should have done. Okay, because obviously everyone knows Harry Carey's passed away. They don't need to make it look like he's alive and well up in the press box. What they should have done, think about this, Caleb. I think this would have helped with the creepy part. Because the whole theme of the movie and everything is that the ghost of baseball's past come back through the cornfield, right? So what they should have done is the hologram somehow should have appeared from the corn, come onto the outfield, sung the seventh inning stretch, and then turned around and disappeared back into the corn. That would have been the right way to do it. To make it look like Harry came back just to sing the seventh inning stretch. take me out to the ballgame. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. By the way, how about Hagerstown? Most of you probably are geographically challenged and don't know where Hagerstown, Indiana is.
East Central Indiana, right?
You got it, Caleb, because you're not geographically challenged. You know most of the state and have covered most of this state.
I would say I am geographically challenged, but I know towns in Indiana, if they're not, you know, the little tiny thing that shows up on the weather map during storm coverage that you've never heard of.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know that any of our federated media stations really reach Hagerstown, but it is located almost center point between Newcastle and Richmond. Now, of course, we've got half our audience that is sitting there thinking, well, where's Newcastle and Richmond? Most people probably know where Richmond is. I bet a lot of people don't know where Newcastle is. Newcastle is south of Muncie. What is it, about 25 minutes south of Muncie? 20 minutes south of Muncie? Straight shot. Once you get outside Muncie, just straight shot south to Newcastle. But yeah, so Hagerstown won the Great Lakes Regional last night, and they are heading to Williamsport. Doesn't happen very often. You know the last team that made it to Williamsport from Indiana?
Was it Newcastle?
It was Newcastle, yes. Apparently that region of the state produces pretty good baseball players at 11 or 12. But yeah, so Hagerstown is going to... Now they had to beat teams from Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky. And remember last year, Ohio and Michigan, I think they both made it into the World Series. Kentucky was the second best team, it seemed, in the region. And so congratulations to Hagerstown Little League representing the Great Lakes region from Indiana. They'll go to Williamsport in about a week or so. We'll take a break. We've got Dan Luss joining us on the other side. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Speaking of the Tin Caps, tonight they take over the radio dial here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Tin Caps Lake County. It is game four of their six-game series, 6:35 the first pitch, 6:15 the pregame show with John Nolan on the call, and John will join us at 5:20 this afternoon. Well, right now we get quickly to our Masters Heating and Cooling hotline, and, you know, we tried to have him on, I don't know, when was that? Was it earlier this week? And we had some phone issues, but now we get to talk all about sports law. It is Sports Law Lust on Twitter. Dan Lust joining us here on the Sports Rush. And Dan, thank you for your patience. Appreciate you jumping on this Friday.
All good. My pleasure to join you. Certainly no shortage of topics today.
No, absolutely not. And let's start with Deshaun Watson. First of all, personally, I think it's a huge mistake for Cleveland to put him in as a starter. I think it makes no difference, but it's a bad PR image. But let's talk legally about his situation. The judge determined six games. I think we can all look at that decision and think that he got out light. What I don't understand is how the NFL is able to appeal it and basically be the one to decide it. That seems like a flawed system to me.
I'm in agreement that it's a flawed system, but the one who agreed to that system is the NFLPA, right? The players' union. So the old system, essentially the disciplinary hearing went to Roger Goodell or his designee, and then if a player had an issue with that, their option was to take that to federal court. Under the new system, we basically added an initial level where an independent arbiter gets to decide if a player violated the personal conduct policy, and if they do find a violation, then it could be appealed to Roger Goodell, in theory where he could up the suspension. The only thing I'll add here that the new system does add, if Judge Sue Robinson would have found that no sexual assault occurred, similar to how two separate grand juries in the state of Texas found that, there would be no upping of the punishment. Roger Goodell or his designee could not up the punishment. It required this independent arbiter to find some type of finding of sexual assault. So it's an improvement on the old system, but it certainly leaves a lot to be desired.
And we talked to you, too, about how the decision was written, and it appeared through the entire decision that the judge was going to really lay the hammer on Deshaun Watson and that at some point decided just six games. So the NFL feels they have a case here. Deshaun Watson is already laying the groundwork with Rusty Harden, his attorney, basically to go to the next step. What would that step be?
So, well, I guess there's one intermediate level here. There have been talks in the last 48 hours. It seems like settlement talks are heating up. Assuming there is no settlement here, the decision would be rendered by Peter Harvey. That's been Goodell's designee.
Mm-hmm.
He's a private attorney, former attorney general of New Jersey, but he sits on an NFL diversity committee, so he's involved with the NFL. The next step for Watson would be to take this matter to a court and basically ask for this to be overturned or reduced. He would be ask a court to hold the suspension in abeyance while the battle is being fought in court. And maybe that might seem like not that meaningful to some. With Tom Brady, he asked for that same requested relief, and that allowed him to play for the entirety of a season. So, we can have a debate of whether that means that Watson could play in week one or if that means week six, but he's going to be asking for some portion of that punishment to be just kind of held up in the air until the merits can be worked out. So that battle would ultimately be fought in federal court. I'm not sure I like Watson's chances taking it to federal court. So my bet, if you're asking me to pick one, I have a feeling this will get settled at some point. I'm not sure if it's going to be before or after this decision on appeal, but I think Watson would be nuts to fight this thing for a year.
If he does get this settled, it would be immediate, right? I mean, as soon as the settlement occurs, because I'm trying to also follow the timeline here. And one of the questions I think is, will Deshaun Watson play for the Browns this year? And if he does, when will that be? What does the timeline look like?
Yeah, so I think we're going to get a decision. Obviously the season starts up in a couple weeks. I think we're going to get a decision from Harvey within the next 7 days. That's my understanding. Under the NFL CBA, the personal conduct policy, required this appeal to be done in an expedited manner. So, so far it's been about 10 days, since the appeal papers were initially filed. I think it's going to happen. I mean, there was talk potentially of getting the decision today, and you and I are talking, 4:30 Eastern time. It might come out in the next half an hour. It's certainly possible. There was some talk it might even come out quicker because the NFL didn't want Watson playing in the preseason game. But because the parties are working on a settlement, I think the judge is going to hold that back, which, sometimes happens in a court of law. It's not the first time I have heard if the parties are close to settling, hey, judge, can you hold off on a decision? We want to try to work this out amongst us. So that's really step one. And then after that, whenever the decision is rendered, it's kind of a race to court, right? I think Watson's going to try to file an appeal or a case in federal court before the season started. So It's kind of a bang-bang play, so to speak. The second the decision is rendered by Harvey, which we all expect to be a heightened suspension, then it'll go up to federal court. My personal opinion, I don't think Watson's automatically going to go to federal court. I think it's going to require a suspension of at least 1 year. I think anything less, just my personal opinion, I don't think Watson's going to take this up and have this battle play out longer and longer. I think if it's less than a year, Watson will take his lumps and return towards the end of the season.
If it's settled, who takes the bigger hit from a public relations standpoint? To me, it seems like the court of public opinion right now is give him a year. I mean, it just seems like that. The reaction to the sixth game has been pretty overwhelming with people saying that Deshaun Watson didn't get the fair punishment or the punishment that fit the, quote, crime. If he ends up getting out for 8 to 12 games, is that kind of a win for Deshaun Watson, and does it make the NFL look bad?
I mean, Brett, you'll probably have at least one listener saying, hey, wasn't he acquitted by two separate grand juries? I get him in my replies. I think to the point that you just made and the point that I agree with, if Judge Robinson didn't find that sexual assault occurred and she came up with zero games, I don't think really you could have an issue with it, because that would mean two grand juries and a judge found that there wasn't enough here. But that's certainly not what we're dealing with. So I think it's light because the judge found four separate counts of sexual assault. And I think conversation you and I had last week, it's only light because it's a six-game suspension for what the judge kind of couched as one violation of the personal conduct policy. But by my count, right, these are four separate counts of sexual assault, four different women, four different incidents on four different days. that required something more than, right, let's, again, basic math, six games divided by four gives you a game and a half per, you know, sexual assault, which is light. So I think in the court of public opinion, I mean, that's a light number. It's lighter than Ray Rice. It's lighter than Jameis Winston. It's lighter than Ezekiel Elliott when none of those guys were dealing with four accusers. So I think if Watson gets off with 12 games or 14 games, I think he'll be happy with it. And that's why you're hearing me say I don't think Watson will take that up to federal court. I think he'll take his lumps. I think him getting six games was a huge win. But anyone that knew the process knew that the NFL was certainly not going to allow that to stand from the optics that a game and a half for sexual assault, where DeAndre Hopkins, different guy, is getting six games for PEDs. Mm-hmm. Tom Ridley is getting a year for gambling. And then a game and a half per sexual assault seems incredibly, incredibly light. So I think the NFL lost in the court of public opinion, and that's why they had to take this up, if you ask them.
Any of this that's being, that's coming up right now in these cases, any of this that would serve as evidence or potential evidence in a civil trial, I guess he still has one that's filed right now, right?
He has one that is currently active, and there might still be some more on the horizon. A lot of this is going to be deemed admissible. A lot of this record's going to be sealed. We're not going to know about it. And keep in mind, right, whatever Watson says here, in theory, right, is a statement taken out of court. I'm not sure if these proceedings are done under oath. Maybe, I think they would be. But we'll see if there's a transcript that comes out of it. In terms of, the suspension, that's not going to be something that's going to be used against him in court. It's an NFL tribunal dealing with a very different standard, very different evidentiary proceedings. There might be an inclination that if this goes to a jury trial, that the jury, right, is going to know about what happened in the suspension. So they'd have to probably do some weeding out of potential jurors. But I wouldn't expect this to come in a court. And I think it's just two very different cases. And also, Brett, what we should mention, right, four women, only four, were presented to the NFL for purposes of these disciplinary proceedings. It wasn't the 24, it wasn't the 30 that settled with the Houston Texans. So I'm not sure, and everyone's been very coy of the identities, I'm not sure of the crossover between these four women that Judge Robinson found for sexual assault and the one remaining case. So to the extent that this one remaining case is not one of the four that was presented to the NFL, I wouldn't think any of this would come up in that case.
Talking to Dan Lust, Sports Law Lust on Twitter. Let's turn to what's happening with the LIV Tour against the PGA. I guess, and again, this is just my small non-legal brain, it looks like the PGA got a win this week against the LIV Tour.
That is correct. It's not just a win. It's a kind of a, at least in legal court, and we'll very emphasis on legal, it's a very, very big win. The judge, and part of the standard for the LIV golf players, was to show irreparable harm. And that can be in terms of monetary and non-monetary damages. But what the judge said is, listen, you guys are making more money by playing in the LIV Tour. How were you irreparably harmed? I'm not even sure you were harmed. You might actually be better off for having gone to the LIV Tour. So it's a big win for the PGA. It's not the end of the case. It's a case that might take years to litigate. But at least this initial level for Taylor Gooch and two other golfers to get that same level of relief, Brett, that I was mentioning, this temporary restraining order to allow them to play despite a PGA-issued suspension. It's the same exact relief that Watson, I think, would be looking for. So you win that. But the problem is what you're hearing, what a judge is saying, is I think that you guys are getting a better deal going to play for LIV, and the judge is getting access to contracts that you and I in the public realm doesn't have access to. So, yes, it's a win for the PGA in court, but business on the golf course, right? I think it's a win for LIV if you're just listening to what the judge is saying.
It absolutely seems that way. And some of the enlightening evidence that came out was a text exchange from Greg Norman, and it was very clear one of his pitches to so many of these players to join the LIV Tour is that the PGA can't touch you. They can't do anything to you. So what's the message now? I mean, it seems to have changed, right?
Well, I'm going to give you a little bit behind baseball here. So as you know, no shock, I am an attorney. The lawyers on this case that represented LIV were some of the largest law firms in the country. Just people can look up which firms they are. So those firms are not inclined to take a case that's a loser, right? And they're, and just everyone knows what comes with being associated with Liv. You might lose some potential marketing opportunities and whatnot. You could just ask Phil Mickelson. So for these firms to take that case, I imagine they had the same exact mindset as a Greg Norman. We're taking this case despite the PR hit because we know we're going to win this. And probably the reason they thought they were going to win, because Ian Poulter and golfers over on the DP Tour, formerly the European Tour, asked for essentially the same requested relief. And Ian Poulter is one of these three LIV golfers who won, who got a temporary restraining order and were allowed to play in a DP Tour event. So Greg Norman's comments, the fact that these big firms are in the case, and the fact that they had precedent in the books that was favorable. Brad, I'll be the first. I'll tell you when I'm right. I'll tell you when I'm wrong. I thought they were going to win. I thought they were going to be playing in these upcoming FedEx, the St. Jude Championship. So the judge just didn't give them a loss, really just kind of took their entire case apart. I think it's a complete change here. I'm not sure if they're not going to drop the case or anything like that. But at the end of the day, I thought they were going to win this DRO, but probably lose on the overall case. But, yeah, it's a loss of epic proportions.
Let me ask this question hypothetically. Could this possibly turn the tables where golfers that went to LIV under the pretense that the PGA could not tell them they were suspended or could not uphold a suspension against them, and then they find out they're suspended and it is able to be upheld in the court, would there be any legal position they could take against LIV once they join LIV? That they were misled or misinformed? Could this eventually be players suing LIV over these decisions?
I see what you're getting at. It's funny. The lawsuit started with 11 LIV golfers, and now we're down to 10. One of them dropped the case immediately. And then there was comments made by Taylor Gooch, one of the golfers that was seeking, this TRO. He's one of the golfers that lost. There were comments that came out that he thought he could just play for LIV on a one-off basis or not a long-term deal and go back to the PGA. So I'm not sure who told him that, if it was his agent or if it was Greg Norman or Phil Mickelson or anyone like that. The devil's in the details, right? You could have a contract that one of these golfers signed with LIV, and if it says, this contract supersedes any type of oral promises that were made, if it's not in writing here, the golfer's not bound by it. LIV is not bound by it. So you could certainly have golfers being unhappy with LIV, but I'm not sure I see any type of litigation, right? Brett, it's the joke I make online all the time. It's kind of the assumption of the risk. If you see the PGA Tour threatening that you're going to get banned for life, right? That was some of the comments that were coming out
right. In
the PGA in the last year. And then, right, it can't be a shock that you were suspended, and it can't be a shock that those suspensions hold up in court. Whoever's telling you, unless it's in the contract, I don't think there would be any type of lawsuit here. The one that the judge did insinuate, which I thought was very funny, the judge said, hey, LIV, you guys are claiming that you have a 20% market share. You have more money than the PGA. Maybe there's a world where the PGA is going to sue you in court for antitrust claims, for monopoly claims. Certainly that's way, way, way down the line. But some of these LIV golfers, according to the judge, have such restrictive contracts that the judge said, you guys are actually closer to engaging in, anti-competitive practices. So, you're not going to see the end of litigation on this end, but I think you're probably, as crazy as it is, more likely to have a countersuit from the PGA than maybe LIV golfers suing the PGA.
So what is the next step? Because I know there's another suit that's out there. Phil Mickelson has his name on it. I guess my question is, how does this play into perhaps the bigger case that's coming?
Yeah, these cases are one and the same. This was a kind of intermediate relief that these golfers were seeking. Only three of those golfers sought the TRO. 11 were originally part of that antitrust case. How do I phrase this in normal terms? Part of the standard for these three golfers was for them to be able to show a likelihood of success on the merits of the underlying case. So if the judge is going to grant you, hey, I'm going to give you this TRO because I think you're ultimately going to win your case. So that's part of the standard. So if you win the TRO, it's a judge saying, I think you probably have something there at the end of the day. So maybe it's a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line. It's a judge saying a nod of approval, hey, you have a good chance of winning. So for these three golfers to lose, That's a judge making a finding that I do not see a likelihood of success on the merits of the the underlying antitrust case.
Wow.
So, yeah, when I say it's a loss of epic proportions, it's a case that we're all getting excited for, me as a sports law history buff, like I'm excited for this giant antitrust case. And there's a reading of it where maybe if you're a money line guy, if you're listening to this trying to find the betting odds, I don't know, maybe you'd put both sides at like minus 120 before that hearing on, or this week. And now, I went on my show and I said, I think the PGA is maybe a minus 300 favorite. It's a very, very big blow. Somebody wanted to say they're a minus 400 favorite, bigger than that. I'm certainly not going to say they're wrong, but, it's early on in the case, but that was a huge loss. And part of the standard looked at the underlying case. So, we'll see what comes of it. But at least as of today, PGA is a monster favorite in this case.
Wow.
And I will add, Brett, just very quickly, we think with each passing day, they become an even bigger favorite with rumors like a guy like Cam Smith, the number two golfer in the world, moving over. So I'm not sure how you could be anti-competitive if you're still landing some of the top golfers. It's seemingly a dichotomy here.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, that really lays it out for us. We appreciate it, Dan, as always. Have a great weekend. We look forward to talking to you the next time.
My pleasure, Brett. Anytime.
Yep, that is Dan Lust. He is Sports Law Lust on Twitter. Also, Conduct Detrimental, the podcast, and had a chance to listen to one of the podcasts even this week where he was talking about all of the ramifications of this PGA Live Tour decision that came down. Great stuff from Dan Lust. We'll take a break. We've got another hour taking you home on a Friday. Time to put the work away. Head into a sports weekend with a sports rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.